with a psychotic disorder. I used to hear voices. Today, with a little help, I'm doing better. But sometimes I still hear voices. My best friend's voice.
I'm proud of you, man.
My girlfriend's voice.
We're going to have a great...
What could more intergenerational links look like for local queer and trans people? That's the subject of Gay and Grey Montreal's new series, Queer Elders Sharing. Trans and queer seniors share their stories through a collection of podcasts, films, and through archival history. Tune into CKUT to hear all the episodes, starting on February 22nd. In the meantime, check out Gay and Grey Montreal on Facebook to follow their launch later this month. History, advice, and connection. All on CKUT 90.3 FM.
If you're young at heart, for it's hard you will find to be narrow of mind. If you're young at heart, you can go to extremes with impossible schemes. You can laugh till your dreams fall apart at the seams, and life gets more exciting with each passing day. And love is either in your heart or on its way. Don't you know that it's worth every treasure on earth when you're young at heart? For it's hard you will find to be narrow of mind when you're young at heart. And if you should survive to 105, look at all you'll derive out of being alive. And here's the best part, you'll have a head start if you are among the very young at heart.
KUT at 90.3 FM. Welcome to Older Women Live for February 2023. Older Women Live is feminist radio from an elderly perspective. My name is Rosemary Wally, and today we're going to be looking at Black History Month with our guest, who is a local historian, Dr. Dorothy Williams. So thank you so much for joining us, Dorothy.
Oh, what a pleasure to be here with you, Rosemary.
Can I start by asking you a little bit about your history? You're from Montreal, aren't you?
Oh, yes. My family's from Montreal. I've got great nieces and nephews that are here. So, yeah, we have a long history in the city.
So where did you grow up? In what part of the city?
Actually, it was in the southwest. Today we call it Little Burgundy. Yeah, at that time it was called many things, including downtown, believe it or not. But it's just east of Saint-Henri. And in the older days, it was attached to what was called the Faubourg Saint-Antoine. And that's really where the jazz clubs were, but we're a little bit west of that. So it's kind of squeezed in between, say, Mountain, Guy, and Atwater.
Okay. So, yeah, what we call today Little Burgundy, but we used to call it downtown.
That's right.
So how did you get interested in this topic?
In Black history in general?
Yeah, Black history.
Well, it really was about who I was. I used to hear stories when I was very young from, you know, my parents and their friends. And I loved the stories that they were talking about, even though sometimes they weren't pleasant. And I was fascinated with that. And also in school, I really enjoyed history as a subject. And over the years, anytime I had an opportunity to learn something new of the past, I just relished it and sort of just checked it off in my head. I just had these little boxes in my head. Mm-hmm. Right through my teens into when I went to CGIP, Dawson, and then at Concordia University. And I spent a lot of time just scouring the library there, looking for references about Blacks in Canada and trying to understand who the Black communities were, who were the members of the Black communities, what they had done, and how they have been recorded, because that's what history is about, right? It's a yeah. recorded word.
Yeah, yeah. So what did you find in general?
Oh, in the mainstream narrative, almost nothing. The only time Black people were quite welcome to be part of the Canadian drama, if you will, is when they're talking about the Underground Railroad. They have traditionally, I don't think now they could get away with it, but traditionally had totally ignored or erased, if you want to put it that way, about 200 years of slavery. And so that was never really a topic, but we did talk a lot about and historians did give a nod to the Underground Railroad in Canada, and that it was a terminus of the United States path to freedom and independence. That seemed to get a lot more play in Canadian history than any other period. But I was aware of the Porters. I was aware of that period of time, and that's that was a little later than the Underground Railroad.
Yeah.
Yes, and then of course local history, which was about who were the first Black people that were able to get jobs in stores or become a secretary in a major firm downtown, or how Blacks were actually able and welcomed to join unions, et cetera. So those kinds of stories were kind of intermixed with this my knowledge of Canadian history.
When did Black people first come to Montreal?
Oh, well, no. We've always been part of the Montreal story. There have always been Blacks in Montreal. I mean, even Canadian history records that Black people were here with Samuel Champlain. Yeah. It's not a specific day of a month of a particular year. we've been part of the Canadian story way before anybody gave a nod to the Irish or the Scottish or, you know, other groups from Europe, because the exploration period almost coincided, I'd say almost the exact same time as the transatlantic slavery. So as a development of the Western Hemisphere, what they called the New World at that time, it was hand in hand White European settlement exploration was hand in hand with the kidnapping and the exploitation of Black labor as slaves in the New World, because that was how they, well, it was part of a long series of things, but that's how they managed to, you say, conquer and thrive over centuries. Yes, so it's all part and parcel of the history. One can write about Canadian history just as they're trying to do in the United States right now, and erase the fact that Blacks were there, and erase the fact that Blacks were part of the building of the nation. So, yeah, we're quite artful about it in Canada, much more than in the United States. They're having to try it. Well, there's a movement in the United States to try to backtrack that. But in Canada, I think, yes, there's now much more recognition that the Black history needs to be part of the narrative from the beginning to really try to explain some of, why we're here, how we got here, as to answer your question, Rosemary, and to show the continuity of the Black presence in this country.
Yes, and the tremendous contribution that people have made. I know a lot of people would never associate Montreal with slavery.
Yes, we're still, you know what, part and parcel of what I've just been talking about is that there are still gaps. History is not often a nice, neat, linear thread. So we're still trying to work through. There still needs to be much more scholarship done on what kind of slavery was happening here. Why was it different from the United States? How did we settle Blacks? It's going to take some time to answer those questions. A lot of questions I get when I give presentations, I just simply say, I cannot answer that. We just don't have the research out there. We don't have scholars in history in Canada. It's now happening. I think I'm seeing more and more evidence of people, young Black people in Canada, saying, I want to know, and using the skills and techniques of the discipline of history to try to uncover some of try to answer some of the questions that are out there.
Well, it's great that you're there as a role model, that you can help people, that people can advance their knowledge, because you have done so much work on the topic.
Well, yeah, I guess I've been promoting and pushing for recognition of African Canadian history when it wasn't sexy. It really was part of my mission and what I was talking to professors about in the 1980s. And when I did my first book, and I would do lectures. I go to libraries and community centers and just talk in university classes. Then really what I was trying to get across is that we need more of this knowledge to be shared and understood and researched. And I never made any bones that what I was sharing with anybody, with everybody, was the definitive answer. And I figured over time we would get more investigations, more analysis of the documents. We would uncover more material, and that would really enrich the general history that I was aware of and that I was sharing. To make those kind of determinations takes more than one person.
So what have you found really inspiring in your research?
I think the stories that I find inspiring are sort of fantastic stories, in that you kind of read them and you go, are you kidding me? And you want to read them again. I'll give you an example. In New Brunswick, and most of us don't think about the Black population in New Brunswick, but that's because they forget that New Brunswick as a province was actually created because there were too many Blacks in Nova Scotia. And the authorities decided to split the province up of Nova Scotia and create two to allow for more centralized or more decentralized, I should say, government to be able to handle the influx of Blacks coming in from the United States at the time. And so it's not surprising to me, of course, being aware of that, that there was a Black population in New Brunswick. And around the turn of the century, and I'm talking about the 20th century, there was a young Black man. His name was Eldridge Eatman, and his sister was quite ill. And of course, in those days, we didn't have this wonderful Medicare system that we have now and the, all of the social safety net. And she needed some care that had to be paid for out of pocket. So he decided, in this wonderful altruistic way, that he was going to use his skills to raise money to help his sister. And he started running. He was a sprinter, I guess, a natural sprinter. He was so fast. He was winning races in New Brunswick and eventually nationally competing and then internationally competing. He wound up in a very short time becoming the world champion sprinter.
Wow.
And nobody knows about this young Black man of New Brunswick who became, I mean, we have a sensational, you know, Bruni Surin and Ben Johnson and stuff. We had this young Black man who was so fast, and of course you want to say, how fast was he? He's recorded as actually beating a horse. He was that fast.
Wow. And when was that? What period?
That would have been, let's see, I'm not sure when that race was done, but sometime his story begins sometime around 1901. Oh. And I think it ends just before the First World War, because he did enlist. And we also know, because the, I don't know if it's the New Brunswick Sports Hall of Fame or the St. John's Sports Hall of Fame, have recorded that he actually beat a locomotive. So it wasn't just beating a horse, but in another race, he actually beat a locomotive. I mean, you hear that and you go, but how come every kid in this country doesn't know that their sprint champion, A, came from New Brunswick, which is almost unheard of, and B, was that fast that on the world stage he was heralded? I mean, you know, that to me is just, again, one of the, we lose as a society because we don't celebrate our differences that are among us. We don't celebrate the achievements of so many groups because we're unaware. And I tell people all the time, you know, we're supposed to be a multicultural country, and yet we are culturally illiterate.
Exactly.
I mean, it's amazing. It's amazing. I mean, it's not just from Blacks. It's also how many of the people listening know who the leaders are of the Japanese community?
Yeah.
Or the Polish community?
No clue. No.
Exactly. I mean, we're just culturally illiterate. And so really, our knowledge in this country is really bicultural. So we know who's leading, who is the, quote, leader of, say, English-speaking Canada or French-speaking Canada. But that's it. Chinese? Nah. Portuguese? No. We have no clue. And also what those communities, those individuals and collectively have given to Canada and continue to give to Canada, that's totally off our radar as well. I guess what I'm trying to do when I'm out there with my company and also my research is really just to change the narrative in Canada. I do want it to be more inclusive. I do want it to be more culturally rich, and to help our youth to really engage in Canada, being totally aware or more aware of so many different cultures and how they contributed to making this the great country that it is.
Well, I mean, you're very ambitious, Dorothy. I mean, I wouldn't even have thought about the fact that we don't know anything about Japanese or the Polish or whatever, but you're absolutely right, we don't.
We don't. And yet, you know, on the international stage, we promote and pat ourselves on the back and saying, look at us, we're multicultural.
I'm laughing here because it's absolutely true what you're saying.
Everything gleaming ain't gold. Every shot I ain't sleep. Shit floats to the top of this old rotten heap. know I know your name. You value money more than people. You see poor people and lock your door. You think the world is yours alone to possess, and no way to save us all. I know you won't change. Just want you to know I know your name. The media's owned by corruption. They make video war games. Millions die, nobody cries. We watch it through your lying eyes. I know you won't change. I just want you to know I know your name.
Talk a little bit about the contribution of some interesting women that you've come across in your research.
Interesting. Well, I think the main one, most of it, historically anyway, would be Marianne Shad.
Okay, tell us about her.
Oh, she was the first Black woman newspaper editor and publisher. And she was an American who, she was never slaved. Her family was non-slave Black community, and she came into Canada really concerned about the fugitives that had left slavery, had escaped slavery, and she was a teacher by profession. But her claim to fame, she did have a school. Her claim to fame was the Black newspaper that she started, and some people attribute her, I say, her contribution as being almost feminist, because for a woman of her time, she was not expected to run a newspaper. So she was outside the box. A lot of men didn't like that. And she also spoke about misogyny, not using those words, and racism, and about the different, perpetuation of bad habits and just the lack of initiative within the Black community of the time. She was not well liked because of that, but she, as far as women were concerned, was a towering figure at that time in, it would have been called Upper Canada at that time, yes.
And what were her dates, more or less?
It would have been, she comes on the Canadian scene mid-19th century, so around 1850, 51, 52, somewhere around there.
Wow, and she was already doing newspapers.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
That's amazing. Can you tell us about others? Are there other women of great significance? Well, of course there are, but...
Well, yeah, I mean, there are. I'm thinking of Rosemary Brown.
Oh, well, Rosemary Brown, yes, she's recent.
Yes, of course. And so she's first black, I think, that was running for a leadership of a national federal party, right?
Yes, she was, yeah.
Yes, and really, she actually started out in Montreal, wound up going out to BC, and really made her mark out there. Of course, Michaela Jean.
Well, yeah, the great Michaela.
Yeah, one can't forget Michaela Jean. And, you know, one person here in Quebec that has been, not by this particular government, by the governments before, recognized for her leadership was Anne Greenup, who was the first president of the Color Women's Club in Montreal. And the Color Women's Club, not so much for its individual members, but for collective response to developing the community. I don't think they thought about it as developing the community. These were women that were coming together to make a better community in Montreal for their families. And she was the first formal president of that group. The provincial government in, 1999, 2000, somewhere around there, they inaugurated the Anne Greenup Prize to recognize what she had done a century earlier in Montreal. and that put Montreal on the map in the sense this first Black women's group developed in Canada that we know of. She stands to me as a towering figure relating to women for sure. Mm-hmm.
And what's the name of that club that they have that's been there about 100 years?
You're talking about the Colored Women's Club?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. That's the Colored Women's Club.
Yeah, the Colored Women's Club. And that's what she was president of that, the first president.
Oh, wow. And what about French-speaking Black people? Do you have information on them?
I would think Marie Villefranche, I'm thinking of several of them, the more recent ones, the French Black community, having made their mark in Montreal, is really a more recent phenomenon. It's would be like late 60s, early 70s, you really start to see the impact.
Yeah, with the arrival of the Haitian community.
Yeah, exactly. And now, of course, a lot of French-speaking Africans as well. I think over time, the community has really changed from being, an American-centered community or centric community to being a Caribbean, English-speaking Caribbean to French Caribbean. And I think over time, given the government's push for French-speaking immigrants, we'll start to see more and more Africans. Those who are actually born on the continent and coming here as immigrants. So that will also totally change, I think, over time, the character of Blackness across the country, not just in Montreal. So it's interesting to see. And to me, it's all part of the same continuity, right? And that's what I'm trying to change.
Yeah, exactly. I think we could maybe talk a little bit as well about Black people's contribution to music.
The towering giant in that regard would be Oscar Peterson. There's Oliver Jones, Louis Metcalf. There are many, many people that participated in the jazz scene here in Montreal, and some of them made a real splash internationally. Those are two that I can think of just off the top of my head.
It's incredible. Just trying to find music for this show, Dorothy. There are so many great women singers, like Michelle Sweeney.
Yeah, like Chuka Khan. There are some groups that were run by Black women, some great singers, and not just jazz and blues, but also gospel. I think of Linda Niles. I think of... there were entertainer performers like Renee Lee and others. Women certainly had an impact in development of music. And I think there's now some good research on women in hip hop, Black women in hip hop in Canada.
And then, of course, there were the showgirls.
They weren't musicians. They were performers. So they were dance. It was a dance group that were being highlighted. It's a wonderful film, by the way. Just a wonderful film. Really, really an intimate view of being Black in that community I was calling, that I talked about before, called St. Antoine. They really give you a bird's eye view of what it was like to be a Black woman and what your choices were at those times and how being involved in the dance scene and being integral to it, because you needed to have performers, these women, they made a life for themselves. And it's really a wonderful story and just well done. Mélan Lam put together a really beautiful tribute to those women.
Thank you. With that, Nicole's, and a song dedicated to all lovers of freedom. But it's freedom of the body, the soul, the mind, the heart. Freedom from your husband, freedom from your wife. Freedom from whatever you want to be free from. We all want it one day. Let's hope we'll all get it. Whoa, yeah. Mr. Billy Taylor's composition. Yeah. I wish I knew how it would
feel to be free. I wish I could break all the chains holding me. I wish you would know what it means to you and me. Then you see and agree that every man should be free. I wish I could share all the love that's in my heart. Yeah!
had a member of our radio collective, Ethel Bain, but her sister was one of the showgirls.
Yes, and there were others that were involved in tap and other dance phenomena as well.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Wow. What about education, Black education in the schools? Are the kids taught to really look up to all these figures that we're talking about?
No.
What do you think of the schools and the teaching and the level of education that the kids get?
Well, education is a provincial matter, right? So some provinces are way ahead of others. In Quebec, the premier has made it clear that the history of Quebec is what they determine the history of Quebec will be. That does not include Blacks, by the way. And other provinces have been far more open to telling the story, ensuring that their students know. I'm thinking of some of the efforts that's going on in Nova Scotia. It's been a bit slog there, but they seem to be making some inroads. And probably the most progressive that I have seen would be Ontario, followed by BC, that are really looking at the curriculum and how they can integrate the Black narrative into the mainstream narrative, and helping the children to celebrate that difference and looking at achievements. So it's uneven, but that's very typical. I mean, this is the continental experience of education, right? Like in the United States, every state has its own ministry or department of education. It will decide what they're going to teach, what's acceptable. We have the same thing in Canada. It is a provincial matter, and it's a question of having progressive or forward-thinking bureaucrats to help direct and change what is being taught, at least the context of it. It's not so much that what's being taught is wrong, or it's just a matter of it being incomplete. And that's sort of what I tell the students when I'm teaching at university, that they've been miseducated. Just like, and I remind them, they don't, of course, they're two, they weren't even born at the time, but they don't realize the impact in academia when all of a sudden in the late 1950s and the 60s, when they said, you know, there's a women's history. I was like, what? And all those male historians went, huh? And there's some analysis. We know that it would be really incomplete if you put it together and you don't talk about women of that period anymore. And it was quite the norm before that. You didn't even think about including women. Women, why write about them in history? It was all about men. It's still a slog. I'm not saying that it's you know, we've solved the problem 70 years later. No. We still have in many disciplines and many sectors to include women in the narrative, to look at what the scientists did, the performers, the creative genius, et cetera, of women over the centuries, to pull them from obscurity and make sure that they help to enrich our understanding of history. What was really going on 500 years ago? What were women doing? Why are we only getting the story of what men were doing? So yes, it's going to take time. I'm not expecting change overnight to integrate and to change the thinking of what is proper or what is our history, what is the real history. It's going to take some time for them to understand that it's everybody's history and that they have a responsibility to broaden the analysis that's there now. But again, that's going to take maybe a generation or two, way after I'm gone. But I'm hoping that we get the word out. That would really be great to get things moving in the other 8-9 provinces that need to make that kind of change.
I know when I first went into a classroom here as a substitute teacher, I was super shocked by the low level of history that was taught. You know, they were still doing the Kings of England, and this was in the 70s. So, of course, the kids were, you know, bored. It was just so irrelevant.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why it doesn't surprise me that we have that kind of attitude even today.
You must be encouraged by the fact that young people are really interested and passionate about the history of the different communities.
Oh, yeah, it just took four decades to get there, but I'm glad we're there now.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. So how do you see the future?
I don't. I'm a historian. I look in the past.
Okay, that's a great answer. Okay.
It's the only answer I'm going to give. I always tell people when you're thinking of the future, ask a sociologist or a journalist, although journalists will tell you, well, I only report today. But no, as a historian, I think I'm better placed to talk about historical threads as opposed to what the future might hold. Although we can learn about it, you kind of glimpse, I remember when that happened 200 years ago, watch out. We do get that. People will repeat because humans tend to forget very quickly. So you do need the historian to remind people, oh, wow, this pattern is starting all over again. Watch out, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So are you seeing some of these patterns returning, or are things really advancing in terms of?
Oh, yeah, but not sort of relation to, although there's always been a pushback about anything progressive and Black. I mean, it's that has never changed. But yeah, I think right now the big pushback is the rising tide of fascism. Certainly the early elements of fascism are in play all over again. And some people are trying to push back on that because they can see it. But if you've never had a course on fascism or European early modern, early 20th century history of Europe, you may not recognize, and you might think everything is brand new, when in fact, we're just repeating. The pendulum has just swung back again. So it's up to us to say, that's not going to end well. Let's do something about it now. Absolutely.
As you look at what's happening south of the border, what are some of your thoughts or feelings? You know, you're talking about the early stages of fascism. Of course, we have that. Do you think that Canadians are obviously influenced by what's happening south of the border?
Well, we've always been influenced by that, Rosemary. We've always been. We turn on our TV at night and we see what's going on in the United States. So, of course, we're influenced by it.
Well, we see a little bit of the racist media, yes.
Oh, well, I mean, people that live on Twitter and Facebook, that they get that 24/7. So,
yeah,
it's front and center. Either the outrage about it or the content to it. That's always there.
Okay. I forget what else we were going to talk about. I think I've run out of questions. Is there anything else that you want to tell us that you think is important?
No, I think it's great to have this discussion. It probably will wind up having the same one 5 years from now. The story has not changed. The need has not changed. And whether we can make serious change in the way government responds, schools respond, that's going to take some time. And so we need to repeat messages. You know, humans sometimes don't respond until they've heard something seven times. I think that's a marketing, mantra, really. In other words, you need to sometimes repeat it multiple times before people will see the item and actually pick it up and put it in their cart to buy. You can't just do the message once. And so I need to be out there talking about it. And so thanks again, Rosemary. It's got to be at least, 20 plus years since our last conversation? So
it's about 20 years, yes.
Yeah. So, hey, thank you for the opportunity to repeat.
Well, thank you very much for agreeing to talk to Older Women Live.
All right.
Well, keep in touch, Dorothy. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. We have to close with a song dedicated to all lovers of freedom. But it's freedom of the body, the soul, the mind, the heart. Freedom from your husband, freedom from your wife. Freedom from whatever you want to be free from. We all want it one day. Let's hope we'll all get it. Whoa, yeah. Mr. Billy Taylor's composition. Yeah. I wish I knew how it would feel to be free. I wish I could break all the chains holding me.
Yeah!
with shore is, would you stand with me? I'm singing to be free. You see the color of my skin, ancestral pain, scars of robbery, even took my name. Yet I'm a loving, loving woman, a woman that love woman. Oh, hold my hand, loving woman. Come on, Rico, like a little head nod. Okay. If you tell me yes, I will hold you in my arms. It will be all right. Together we're strong. I see some people filled with hate just cause we walk by trying to build a world. And we try. And we are loving, loving woman. Woman, I love woman. Oh, hold my hand, loving woman. And today COVID comes and we cannot stand together as one, but in my heart never will we part. And we will be loving, loving woman. Woman, a loving woman. Oh, hold my hand, loving woman. And the homelessness in Tacaranto grows. Poverty we know, and sickness comes. We must be one. And we can be loving, loving woman. Woman, loving woman. Oh, hold my hand, loving woman. Good singing along, everyone. Last time for all those who didn't catch it. So now, fake, okay? Fake lip moves. Okay, here we go. Loving, loving woman. Woman, loving woman. Thanks, Jody. Hold my hand, loving woman. Oh, will you hold my hand, loving woman. I think it's my great pleasure, I hope I have this right, to introduce to you the one and only, is it Lucy? Is it Rico? Am I right? Yes? Oh, Rico. He is a wonderful, wonderful activist, teacher, storyteller, and drag star. Just an incredible all-around, wonderful
happen to you if you're young at heart. For it's hard you will find to be narrow of mind if you're young at heart. You can go to extremes with impossible schemes. You can lie till your dreams fall apart at the seams, and life gets more exciting with each passing day. And love is either in your heart or on its way. Don't you know that it's worth every treasure on earth when you're young? For it's hard you will find to be narrow of mind when you're young at heart. And if you should survive to 105, look at all you derive out of being alive. And here's the best part, you'll have a head start if you are among the very young at heart. Mm-hmm.
it's hard you will find to be narrow of mind when you're young at heart. And then you should survive to 105. Look at all you derive out of being alive. And here is the best part. You'll have a head start if you're among the very young at heart. Ooh, if you are among the very young at heart.
Africa unite, Fatsilelile.
This is a previously aired show from 2021, the 3rd of February, so almost 2 years ago, and it is about a book launch of a very important book.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Amandla, our weekly African current affairs program produced both in English and in French here on CKUT 90.3. My name is Helden, and as usual, lovely to see you, Doug and Gwen. How are you guys doing?
Good evening. Good evening.
Good. How are you, Helden?
I'm good, thank you. So what do you guys have lined up for today? Let's get into it.
Well, actually, we have a really special show today, which is that we participated in a book launch, Doug and I did, yesterday. It's a book, well, it's actually a reissue of an old book that came out in 1966, Mau Mau From Within, an analysis of Kenya's peasant revolt, which has just been reissued by Daraja Press as Mau Mau, the story of the Kenya Land and Freedom Army from Within. I won't get into too much detail. There's a detailed introduction to the panel. But suffice it to say, the book is fascinating and the panel was fascinating. Doug and I were joined by Feroz Manji of Daraja Press and a good friend to Amandla. Regular listeners know who he is. Also by Uli Gerstad, who's another good friend of Amandla, documentary filmmaker. And a new guest, Kamoji